Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Andy Finn Show. I'm Andy Finn, the Finn Man, and for the next hour, you're in Finland. And today is Monday, November 3rd, and we are on the eve of the 2008 election. It is amazing that we are actually finally here. This election has gone on longer. The campaign has gone on longer than any campaign in our history. And I'm ready for it to be over. So tonight we're going to talk about the campaign, or really about where we're headed here. And I'm going to make my re-endorsement of Barack Obama. But today's November 3rd. In addition to it being the eve of the 2008 election, the Who are playing downtown at the Verizon Center this evening, my favorite band of all time. So on our breaks at 15 and 45, we're going to listen to a little live Who and see what we can see. So let's talk a little bit about the two candidates we're dealing with here. Basically, we have John McCain and Barack Obama. And when you listen to partisans on each side, you hear a one-sided view of what they think of those things. My job tonight is to show you a little bit of both sides. That's what we're going to do in the first couple segments. And before we're done, we're going to make some predictions about the election. So let's start with domestic policy first. Now, Obama has been the candidate of change. He wanted to get out of the war, but he also wanted to change some things on domestic policy. And they came to the fore when we had the economic meltdown. It was about the time of the Republican convention that McCain decided that he, too, was going to be the candidate of change, not the candidate of experience. He picked Sarah Palin and went out claiming, "I'm for change, too, and I am a safer bet than Obama is for change." Doesn't look like the country's bought that, but let's examine this. So let's start with the thing that was the centerpiece of George Bush's domestic policy, and frankly, one of the only things that was on his domestic policy agenda besides education, and that is taxes. Bush's goal was to cut taxes. He cut taxes three times in the first 3 years for a total of roughly $2.3 trillion. His initial argument when he was running for office was that we were running a surplus, taxes are too high in general, and we are running a surplus, and giving that money back to Americans has advantages, as the president put it during the campaign, "It's your money, you paid for it." Very eloquent, but his basic argument was, we don't need to collect more than we make. Now, at the time, my issue was, well, wait a minute, Mr. President, we're collecting more than we need to on Social Security right now. Those are payroll taxes. And one of the interesting things is that Republicans never want to talk about payroll taxes. They always want to talk about marginal tax rates. They argue that, well, your payroll taxes, your Social Security and Medicare, those are going to fund benefits you get. So those aren't really taxes. You're getting benefits back. But in fact, ever since, well, certainly since Social Security was fixed during the Reagan administration, but even before, those monies have been going into the general revenue fund, and we just build up deficits when it comes to Social Security. So it's interesting the way this works out, but when Obama says he wants to give a tax break to 95% of working Americans, everybody says, no, no, 40% of them don't pay taxes. And Obama points out, no, no, they pay payroll taxes, Social Security and Medicare. And that takes a big chunk out of the paycheck. Whenever Republicans and conservatives want to talk taxes, they only want to talk marginal tax rates, that is income taxes, not all the other taxes. For a lot of people, the majority of the taxes they pay are payroll taxes. So on taxes, Obama does not want to maintain the Bush tax cuts. This is an issue on which John McCain flip-flopped. He did want to, originally he was against the Bush tax cuts, didn't vote for him. And then as part of getting the nomination, he came around and he decided he was for the Bush tax cuts and he wants to extend them. Now, keep in mind what this means. The Bush tax cuts were $2.3 trillion worth of tax cuts over 10 years. They capped them at 10 years and had them sunset, that is, expire, because had they kept them in permanently, it would have shown red ink as far as the eye can see. And so they weren't willing to do that to the budget in the out years. They only went 10 years with it and figured they could manage it. They also figured they could pressure the country to approve additional tax cuts later, because if you didn't, it was just like a tax increase. That is, it was going to hit the economy hard. Here's the problem with all that, that in general, Republicans want to cut taxes, but you never hear them talk about getting serious about cutting spending. So they are pursuing what's known as the starve the beast approach to taxes. That is, if you cut off the revenue, eventually the government has to stop spending. But it's not a very responsible way, because there's no suffering involved, there's no hardship involved, there's no sacrifice involved. You go to the people and you say, we have free candy, tax cuts, take some, and people elect Republicans. But it doesn't take any political courage to offer tax cuts. Everyone's for tax cuts. The tough part is, where are you going to cut the budget if you're actually going to rein in spending? And Republicans never talk about that. Admittedly, Democrats don't talk about it much either, but at least in the case of Democrats or someone like Obama, in general, Democrats pay for their spending. That is, they've long been called the party of tax and spend by Republicans. But if that's true, then Republicans are the party of borrow and spend, because over the last 8 years, whether it was the war in Iraq, which they didn't pay for, or it was the tax cuts, or it was the other hardships or bills we came into, the increase in the Pentagon's budget, whatever it is, we have charged it to our children and our children's children. And for some reason, that's okay with much of the country, and it seems to be okay with the Republicans in power. So on taxes, Obama would not continue the Bush tax cuts. That is, he wants to take the marginal rates, tax rates, for the people who are making more than $250,000 back to where they were in the 90s under Clinton. And he's offering a tax cut to the other 95% of the people who pay, who work and pay payroll taxes. What's interesting is that you have to offer a tax cut. I mean, Obama figured out a long time ago the way to take on Republicans is not to be put in the position of saying, I'm going to raise taxes and they're going to cut taxes. He had to come out with a tax cut. Realistically, is anybody going to be able to cut taxes at this point? I don't think so. The economy's in shambles. Now, the old argument is you can't raise taxes in a recession. But let's face it, it's interesting how we got here. The Bush tax cuts were supposed to fuel the economy and help it grow. And if you believe Arthur Laffer and supply side economics, in fact, what goes on is when you cut marginal tax rates and reduce tax income to the government, reduce the percentage that people pay, you actually get more revenue coming in because it spurs economic growth. That was the argument made in the 80s, and the country sort of fell for it. It did not work. It is not true that you get more revenue when you cut taxes. It's counterintuitive for a reason. It ain't true. And it hasn't proved true during the Bush years. In fact, 8 years of massive tax cuts, including backloaded to these it's actually a 10-year plan, so backloaded to the back 4 to 5 years, we are at the peak of the Bush tax cuts right now. We should be reaping the benefits right now. Instead, the economy's in shambles. Now, there's other reasons going in here, but even if before the financial meltdown, the Bush administration was not anywhere near recouping the revenue that were given away in tax cuts. So you can make the fairness argument, if you want, that we should give the money back to the people, but let's stop pretending that tax cuts increase revenues to the government. It didn't work in the 80s. It hasn't worked now. Are we going to have to try it a third time before we know for sure? I don't know. But so on taxes, the other things that Obama would do is he would he's going to raise the capital gains back to where it was during the 90s. He's also going to reduce the capital gains on small businesses. That's the percentage of money that you pay on incomes and dividends when you sell stocks or other investment income. And he's also got a couple of other taxes he's playing with. McCain is just saying, I want to cut taxes. And he's not worrying about how he balances the budget. Neither of them are, really. Obama's got a lot of new spending. McCain's got some new spending. And McCain hits Obama hard on spending and how you're going to pay for it. But in fact, McCain doesn't say how he would pay for his tax cuts. And when independent groups have added up all the tax cuts and all the spending increases that both sides have proposed, it turns out that the Republicans under McCain have proposed bigger cost to the budget, I guess is the way to put it. So on taxes, if you're a Republican, you say that McCain's got the better plan. And if you're a Democrat, you say Obama's got the better plan. When we get to the budget, the McCain campaign continues to say, at least Sarah Palin does, that they will balance the budget in 4 years. And I think I heard McCain say it a couple of weeks ago. It simply cannot be done. If you remember when we started, the Clinton administration, admittedly, they got lucky. The Clinton administration managed to end up with a balanced budget their last couple of years. Why? Because the internet boom helped them out. A lot of tax revenue came in when the economy grew in the 90s under Clinton. And tax revenues went way up, so the deficit came down, and in fact, we got rid of the deficit. There was even a time in 1999 when I was reading articles that said, is it a smart thing to pay down the deficit? I'm sorry, to pay down the debt. In other words, we were going to run, it looked like we were going to run $300, $400 billion surpluses. And the question is, would it be smart to put that against the debt and retire some of the national debt, which at the time was about $5 trillion going towards $7 trillion. We did stabilize, and the Clinton administration did not get up to that $7 trillion. But some economists actually argued that it would be a mistake to pay off too much of that. You always want some debt. So there was this worry that we might pay off too much debt. Are you kidding me? We paid off some in the Clinton years. Bush got in. First year he's in office, he enacted $1.7 trillion of his $2.3 trillion in tax cuts, wiped out the surplus. Then we had 9/11. Then we had other expenses and Katrina and other things that cost us money. And we haven't seen a balanced budget since. And the president, in fact, ran for re-election after one term in office, saying, I will cut the deficit in half by the time I leave office. Well, that's interesting since he came into office running a surplus. We don't hear much about that. So today McCain and Palin are saying we will balance the budget within 4 years. That cannot happen. We are currently running, this year we might run a $500 billion deficit, the largest in history, half a trillion. And we're likely to see that next year too. No one's going to care about the deficit for a couple of years here. The job of the new administration will be to get the economy back on track. That may require another stimulus package. It may require a couple of things, but it is not going to require a balanced budget. So we're going to settle for unbalanced budgets here, for deficits for some period of time here. And we will have to see how that goes. It's just all kind of weird how this is working. But when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Social Security, Medicare, and other domestic priorities, including education, but not before we deal with the financial meltdown and the banking crisis. The Andy Finn Show will be back after this.
Hi, I'm Andy Finn, and I am begging you to listen to my show at www.andyfinn.us.
The Andy Finn Show, Uncommon Talk Radio.
We are back on the Andy Finn Show, and you were listening to The Who Live from a concert in 2002 that I was at in Toronto. And that was a little throwaway ditty, a little the ending of a song, a 3-minute ending on the song Sea and Sand from Quadrophenia, just to show you a little bit of how high energy those boys are. Let's move back to the election, which is tomorrow. Today is November 3rd in the Who are downtown tonight, but the election is tomorrow. And we're comparing Obama and McCain, and I'm explaining why I'm endorsing Obama. So let's go on to the banking and the financial mess on domestic policy. When the financial crisis hit, no one really had a good answer, even our whiz kids on Wall Street or our Secretary of the Treasury, Henry Paulson, and the SEC chair and the head of the stock exchange. All these folks did not know quite what to do. So it's no surprise that our politicians didn't know what to do. But it was interesting to watch their behavior. Both of them seemed to know enough initially to lay low. That is, no point in getting out there claiming too much. But then McCain really kind of shot from the hip, as fighter pilots are wont to do. That's part of the difference in temperament here, I think, is that Obama has shown to have an amazing temperament, and McCain, not so much. McCain, first of all, he came out on a Monday morning at the beginning of this crisis after the government had put $85 billion into Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. He came out and said the fundamentals of the economy are strong. I think that might have been Monday, September 15th. And that day, the stock market went down 500 points. That was before we got used to these 600, 800, 900 point fluctuations. Within 2 hours, he reversed himself and he withdrew his comment that the fundamentals were strong, but it was out there and that soundbite got played over and over. He also said within a week or two there that the head of the SEC should be fired, actually a Republican fellow. He said that we should not bail out AIG, the insurance company that got in trouble because it insures people who make these loans, banks that make these loans. The next day, the federal government did, in fact, bail out AIG, and McCain reversed himself on that Wednesday and said, okay, I'm okay with the AIG bailout. Then he suspended his campaign and said, I need to go to Washington and deal with this financial crisis. I'm suspending my campaign until we get a bill passed out of the House and Senate that the president can sign. It might mean that I won't be at the debate on Friday, but this is too important. So McCain suspends his campaign, supposedly, although he still ran ads. His spokespeople still appeared on TV shows. He never really suspended it. He did go to Washington. And he kind of walked into a buzzsaw. Without recounting everything that happened, the Republicans did not have a firm position staked out yet. The Democrats were on board helping the Bush administration deal with this. McCain kind of muddied the waters. In fact, at the White House meeting where he and Obama appeared, and by the way, if you remember, Bush tried to help McCain. McCain tried to get the upper hand here by looking decisive and taking action. And he goes to Washington. He gets Bush to call a meeting, a summit of congressional leaders, and including Obama and him, at the White House. And Bush called Obama personally and said, please come to the meeting. So it would look like Obama was following McCain's lead. They get to the meeting. Everybody has their say, including the president. And Obama has his say. He's kind of perceived as the leader of the Democrats in some ways, although not on financial issues. And when it came to McCain's turn, he actually didn't have much to say, which was really interesting. So, with all that in mind, we get to the debate, I think it was the very next day, that Friday night, I think it was a Friday night, the first debate, and McCain announces he's going to go to the debate, but we don't have a deal signed. The Republicans walked out of that, the negotiations, and wanted a different deal. The Democrats had changed the deal somewhat. Now the Republicans wanted to change the deal, wanted to put their stamp on it. So McCain went to the debate, resumed his campaign without a deal. So he just looked erratic, I think is the word most people used. Meanwhile, Obama mostly kept his mouth shut and said, it's a tough situation. We got to do what we can. We need to pull together. He looked more presidential. Most people expected the young guy to lurch from policy to policy and idea to idea and speak his thoughts out loud without knowing what you were doing. But you have to remember that you can spook the markets when you're the president. You cannot afford to just make these verbal pronouncements when you're president. It gets in the way. It can cause the markets to go up or down. In addition, you want candidates who are not trying to take over and do the president's job. John McCain was trying to run things from the campaign position. Obama was smart not to do that. So I think in many ways that, you know, when people look back and analyze this and try and figure out where did McCain lose this, where did Obama win this, here's what's going to be said. What they say today, what Republicans say is, look, McCain was ahead. After the conventions, he took the lead, and then it was the financial meltdown that cost him this election. No, that's a misread of how this election was expected to go, how people predicted it would go, and how it's gone. It is true that it's been made worse by the financial meltdown, but I've been saying for 6 months, if you've been listening, that when we got to the debates, that first debate was going to be a Reagan-like moment. That is, Reagan stood next to Jimmy Carter and the country said, you know, maybe he's not a crazy old fool. Maybe he's not going to push the button and cause nuclear war. Maybe we can trust him. He looks like he stands up pretty well next to the other guy. The country needed to get to see Reagan and picture him being presidential. And he was friendly and easygoing and funny and capable in the debate. Same with Obama. And we knew this was coming. If you know anything about how the presidential politics works, you know the country's waiting to take a look at you in the debate. So Obama went to that first debate, and he wasn't the guy that suspended his campaign. He wasn't the guy that threatened not to show up at the debate. He wasn't the guy that suggested canceling the vice presidential debate and substituting the presidential debate there as a way to cover his candidate. No. Obama was cool, calm, and collected through all of this. I argue that McCain lost it in several ways. It wasn't simply the financial meltdown, although the financial meltdown meant the rest of the election was going to be a home game for the Democrats. So that is, played on their home turf, the economy and domestic policy, rather than foreign policy, war on terror, and the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. But two things more important crop up here. The first is that the country needed to see Obama side by side with McCain. That's what happened. And secondly, McCain is the one that was erratic, that came out with a different approach or a different policy pronouncement every other day and looked like he couldn't make a decision and stick with it. He didn't seem to be cool, calm, and collected. The final issue I'll talk about in domestic policy is education. You know, Bush did pretty well with No Child Left Behind. He kind of reclaimed some of the education issue for Republicans. But in general, the country trusts Democrats on this issue. And so McCain wants to tweak No Child. Obama wants to tweak it. It should be a wash, but the country's always going to cut Democrats some slack on a question like education. So that brings us back to the middle issue here. Well, I guess I'll go on to foreign policy. Let's do that. So on foreign policy, we start with the war in Iraq. Right? Obama claims he was right in opposing the war and that McCain was wrong and can't admit it. And McCain says he was right in promoting the surge, and Obama was wrong in opposing it, and he can't admit it. And every time they have this argument, Obama says, look, which is more important, that you got the initial attack and invasion wrong, or that once you're in there and you flounder for 3 or 4 years, that you tried something different and it seems to have worked for the most part. Now, McCain doesn't accept that premise, of course. McCain's argument is, wait a minute, here's what's going on here. We needed to go in. We needed to stop Saddam Hussein. That was the right call even today. And once we were in and the strategy wasn't working, I called very early on for more troops, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And Obama keeps returning to the original question, saying we shouldn't have been in Iraq. And for most of the last 5 years, or maybe 3 years, 58% of Americans at least have agreed with him. That is, a majority of Americans say we should not have gone into Iraq. So we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to move into a little more detailed discussion of Iraq, as well as other foreign policy issues. The Andy Finn Show will be back on WEBR after this.